Church Uncharted is a podcast about following Jesus and making new followers of Jesus in the uncharted waters of today. Your host, Matt Schubert, is a mission facilitator and church planter in the Rockingham Mandurah region of Western Australia. He knows that the call to follow Jesus can look different in an ever-changing culture, and when it comes to evangelism, there's no perfect formula. So he'll be joined by guests who'll help us, the church, navigate these exciting unknowns.
And so each of the groups, they do something different, and it's whatever they want to do. So I no longer tell them how to have fun, and they have more fun, and they actually invite their friends. This boggled my mind. All I did was create an environment that was theirs.
It's our hope that as we listen into the following conversation, we'll be encouraged by the everyday power of the gospel, be given a deeper love for God's church, and be stirred to see the way the Spirit is at work in the lives of those around us. We're a small podcast hoping to spark a big conversation. So if you get something out of today's episode, please partner with us by sharing the link with a friend or to your social media feed. This is season two.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to the Church Uncharted podcast. Thanks for joining us again today. And today we have joining us Matt Birch. Matt Birch, you have we've gone back a little while. We've known each other for a little bit of time now. I'm not sure how long, but
about 6 years, I think.
I guess we're kind of brought together a little bit by ecumenical participation. I guess I was working with the youth at one church here in Rockingham, and you're another. And actually, you and I were one of the first kind of youth pastors, youth leaders who kind of got together and went, actually, let's work together a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. We were. Yeah, thank God was speaking to us both. Well, and I think you called me, and we're like, let's do coffee.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I think we might have gone to Jamaica Blue.
I think it was, yeah.
Shout out to Jamaica Blue,
yeah.
proud sponsor of this episode, and ecumenical participation.
Yes, absolutely.
Matt, thanks for coming on. Tell us a little bit about yourself, about your story, about your family.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, thanks for having me. I've been listening to all the episodes, and you've had some incredible guests, so I'm quite humbled. So thank you. And I am Matt Birch. I'm the youth pastor at Rockingham Baptist Church, and also the high school chaplain at South Coast Baptist College down here in Rockingham, WA. And I am a husband of a beautiful woman named Sian, and the father of four wonderful kids. Mm-hmm. My youngest is only 5 months old. He was born in the first week of lockdown, actually, which was very cool. He didn't even leave the home. He was born at home, and he didn't leave the house for at least his first 8 weeks of life.
That's right. His view of the world was very limited for the first 8 weeks of his life.
Absolutely. Yeah, he didn't realize in the outdoor existed.
They actually don't often open their eyes much early on, though, do
yeah,
they?
I don't think he even remembers it, so I don't think it's a problem.
I don't think it'll have long-term effects.
No, not at all. Yeah.
And so you're a youth pastor. Yeah. How long have you been a youth pastor for?
So I started my first paid role at Rockingham Church of Christ back in 1999. And I was there for two or three years, and took a couple of years off. And then I was at Warmbrough Community Church for 9 years in the children's ministry. And now this is my seventh year at Rockingham Baptist.
Yeah, great.
All with the word Rockingham in common.
That's right. Yeah. You're one of the most kind of Rockingham church leaders I know. If I need to know about the church happenings in this local area, you're one of the first people that I'd come to.
Oh, well, thank you, Matt. Yeah. So I didn't grow up here. I grew up in Bibra Lake, and I moved to Rockingham when I was in year 10. So I started going to a local public school in year 11. I became a Christian when I was 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I suppose that was a while ago now. So, yes.
We won't press into your age. No, but you're a great youth pastor, Matt. And I've really enjoyed, we've pulled it together for, fellowship meetings of different youth leaders and youth pastors, and we've worked together to put on big Rockingham-wide youth events, and there's just been some very encouraging times that we've had together there.
Yeah, they certainly have been. I've really enjoyed those events, and I just love the unity of it, like where all the different youth pastors. And I think if you help me recall this, there was around 50 volunteers.
Mm.
Like all the church, there was about 10 different or 9 different church youth groups, and we all combined together for a combined outreach event.
Yeah.
But there ended up being 50 or 60 volunteers, which just made life so much easier.
Yeah.
Little bit more administration for us, but it was the load went, especially when we worked together as the body of Christ and carry the load together, it was a lot lighter, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we found that was hugely encouraging for our volunteers to have that opportunity to get to know those people from other churches, and just really great times there. And
just yesterday I still had a student saying, oh yeah I remember being at Unify here, which is that event, and so they still talk about it. We haven't done one this year,
no.
But maybe next year.
Yeah, that's right. This year's been crazy. I think people are forgiving when it comes to this year. But really, we're here for our listeners. We're here in person today, which is cool. I'm sitting across from Matt, and we had two purposes for getting together today. One was to record a podcast, and the other was that I needed to return a book that I had that you lent me at really the start of the year, and I've kept on forgetting to return it to you, but this was a good opportunity to do that. And actually, I want to talk to you about some of the contents of that book in a moment, but before we do that, I have something on my conscience, because it turns out that you're not the only person that I have borrowed a book from and haven't returned. I like every week I walk in and I look at my bookshelf, and a friend of mine lent me this novel like towards the end of high school, and and I still haven't returned it. And
that was only a few years ago for you, Matt.
But I feel like it's been too long now that I can't return it now. It's been too long. But what's ironic is that the title of the book is The Book Thief.
The book for what?
The Book Thief.
Oh, no.
Yeah, The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak or whatever his name. So
if you're Matt's friend and you're missing The Book Thief, you contact him.
I'm the book thief now.
You're missing the book.
My goodness. Yeah. Oh, okay. Nice. Anyhow, the book that I borrowed from you was Building a Discipleship Culture, and it's written by some of the guys from 3DM, and you lent it to me because really, we've had a lot of discussions around discipleship and how church does that, how a youth group does that, how it can be reproducible and ongoing and not dependent on any few two people. And this is a kind of thinking in this book and by 3DM that has really impacted you. What's the main essence of this that has really kind of shifted your way of thinking?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think it's funny, when I started back in youth ministry, so I was in kids ministry for 9 years, back in youth ministry, one of the things that I really, one of the reasons I said yes to this role is my senior pastor was doing coffee and he said, you know what, it's easy to get 100 kids to an entertaining event. Especially our church is at a school, and I'm the chaplain of that school. So it's very easy to attract 100 students along to a fun event. But he said to me, I prefer you to make 20 disciples than entertain 100 students. And I was like, sweet. In that case, I'll take the job.
Mm.
And I remember my first little while being there, and I'm like, okay, God, we got this discipleship. I know that it's really important, but what do I do? And I didn't know how to do it. Like I brainstormed all these ideas, students,
even though you had gone to Bible college, you were really going, actually back to basics. What, What's the A, B's and C's? Like, what's actually the essential building blocks here?
Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, where are the students? I'm like, music. I know music is a good bridge to where students are. Sport is a good bridge. And I'm in the school and all this good stuff. And I got to preach to the students in our chapel services regularly. But I'm like, but what do I do? And I didn't know how to actually do anything else. So I just started a Friday night program like everyone else does. You know, I tried to make it a little bit more sermon orientated rather than game orientated. But at the end of the day, it was just another Friday night program. And I found myself accidentally in competition with all my, you know, local youth pastors like yourself. And in fact, you're at a school as well. So, you know, we can kind of relate. And it's easy, we can attract our own students. But often what all we're doing is robbing the students from their own church youth groups, you know, because we put on something, you know, a little bit different. And maybe they go to our school. So, yeah, it was really interesting. So I found myself in prayer and kind of going, God, how do I do this different? I don't know how to do this different. Like, I understand discipleship is really important, but I see it's a very transient culture on a Friday night, you know, and there was a group of students that would go around from one youth group to the next, to the next, to the next. And I was a bit dissatisfied, you know, with it, but I didn't know what else to do. And when I was invited, there was a very generous person who gave 150 grand to the Baptist churches of Australia and actually said, hey, you know, and use this money to start a discipling culture. So they invited 3DM over, and there was 30 youth pastors across Australia that was invited into this learning opportunity, this discipleship culture opportunity. And I was one of them, six from WA, and it started a 2-year journey. And can I just say straight up front, it wasn't a curriculum. It wasn't the silver bullet I was hoping for. I was hoping that we're just going to change the way I do everything. And I was just like going to be able to plug and play and implement this new thing. And it was going to solve all my discipleship kind of prayers. Yeah. But it wasn't that. It wasn't that at all. But as it turns out, it was more of a heart for learning, getting back to what the Bible teaches about how to follow Jesus and how to create a disciple that knows how to make another disciple, that knows how to make another disciple. So, so it was really an invitation into a longer discussion. It was really more about changing your worldview, and it was not a curriculum. But during that 2-year process, it was a 2-year commitment where I would go, we'd all fly to Victoria, which is totally off the table at the moment, but we'd all fly to Victoria, all 30 of us, and we'd do this thing together led by the 3DM guys that come from Sheffield in England. And they would take us through content, but ultimately it was simply an invitation to prayer with this new discipleship worldview and an invitation to prayer and go, all right, God, how do I contextualize discipleship in my church environment? And there's no assumption that it'll be the same in one church as it is in another. And I loved that. I remember being so frustrated every time we get on the plane and fly home. I'll be like, but I don't have the silver bullet. Like, I still don't know what it is. Yeah. But that was the wonderful part of the process. Actually, it took me back to my knees, and I was like, all right, God, how do you want to do this? And nowadays we're doing something very different, but it was quite a process.
Because I remember having conversations with you, you know, after these youth fellowship meetings, and we'd be talking about some of the stuff that we're just kind of pondering on, stuff that you're learning, and you know, we'd share some of the frustrations that come with youth ministry, and perhaps we might have some pastors and church leaders who might be listening in on this and go, actually, that's a similar kind of frustration to big church meetings. And part of the problem that you identified for me was that, you know, we'd pull all of our effort, all of our volunteers into putting on a really great one size fits all Friday night event. But the problem was that it wasn't a one size fits all event, that it wasn't possible, or at least it's not possible for most churches to be able to put on such a magnificent Friday night event, which appeals to all personality types, all hobbies. And if you're listening in, the the trend for most churches is that you end up getting, you end up alienating a lot of the older students, and you get a whole bunch of young, often boys who just love dodgeball.
Yeah, that's right.
So share, what was it that made you realize that, hey, we need to change something here. We really need to move from that Big Friday night event to something that looks a little bit more personalized. And share your thinking and how you actually ended up structuring that a little bit.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. So it's funny, when you start this journey, you try and kind of fit what you're already doing into it, because you just want to feel like you're doing the right thing. Like we always feel like we need to have all the answers all the time. And I imagine every leader here can feel that, can recognize that, but we're, you know, you don't have to be very transparent to realize you actually don't have all the answers. And so it was actually during, we're in one of these, we were reflecting on our 6-month goals and we were doing a SWOT analysis. Yeah, you've got strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and threats. And I was doing a SWOT analysis, and I was in a particularly transparent mood this particular day. And I realized, like, I just took a really hard look at my youth ministry. And since then, I've also done it, you know, with the church in mind as well. But with the youth ministry, I just realized, actually, you know what? I've got some filters that I never intended to have. Like, it was never my heart to have all these filters in place. And so,
What are you meaning when you say filters? Is this stuff that prevent certain kids from or prevent connecting with certain kids? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. So so for any random student, like, there were particular filters that if they didn't pass through all the filters, they probably wouldn't come.
Okay.
And so I started looking at my Friday night program, and, you know, if you're just looking at numbers, it was kind of successful, you know, getting 30 to 50 students, and for our size church, that was pretty good. But actually, when I looked at who was there and how many and the turnover, all of a sudden I became much less satisfied. So the filters I noticed I had in place during this SWOT analysis was, if the students didn't come to my school, then they probably wouldn't feel welcome, or they probably wouldn't fit or feel like they belong. And so I had this strange issue where I had kids at my church who didn't come to our school, and so they would come along on a Friday night, but it was majority South Coast Baptist College kids. And if they didn't go to South Coast Baptist College, they would be like, these are not my people. And so they wouldn't come back. And so I wasn't ministering to my own students that come to my church. And so that was one of the accidental filters. If they didn't come to my school, they wouldn't come to my youth. And then another one was, if you weren't a people person, extroverty type person that likes big crowds and playing big games, loud games, you know, then you probably wouldn't come. So, if you're an introvert, you would be mortified at the thought of coming to our Friday night youth. And then there was another one where it was majority year sevens and eights.
Yeah.
And one thing, I don't think it's a secret to any youth pastor out there, if you're in year 9, 10, 11, or 12, you do not want to hang out with a year 7 or an 8.
Yeah.
Year 7s nowadays are kind of 11 turning 12 right at the start of the year, and, you know, 13, maybe 14 as they push it, depending on when they were born. But they're very different from a 15 and 16-year-old, you know. And nowadays, year 12s, they can be 18 before they leave school. And so it was another filter. If you weren't in year 7 and 8, you wouldn't come. And so even though I was getting 30 to 50 students pretty regularly, I realized I had all these filters that I never intended to have. If you didn't come to our school, you wouldn't come. If you weren't a people person, extrovert, you wouldn't come. If you weren't in year 7 and 8, you wouldn't come. And in fact, if you were coming for year 7 and 8, you'd stop coming by the end of year 8, start of year 9, because you didn't really want to hang out with the annoying year 7s.
Yeah.
And I just was not happy with this. That is not discipleship.
Yeah.
Discipleship is a much longer process. And I hated this idea where the students could say, oh, I tried church.
Yeah.
And it's not for me.
Yeah.
And that's not true. They didn't try following Jesus. They simply came to a youth group for a little while. And so I realized I had these accidental filters, and I just wasn't happy with the vehicle of the Friday night program anymore. And so I started trying to imagine with God, like, okay, so what do we do?
So you realize that there were a whole range of kids that you wasn't even possible for you to reach according to your current model because you had all these filters up in place.
Yeah, and I'm not saying nobody got saved. People did get saved, and they still come to the church today. But we're talking a minority, you know. But there's so many more students. Like I, as the chaplain, go along to graduations, and for the last few years, I'm looking on the stage of the kids who are graduating, and just about all of them came to my youth ministry at one point.
Yeah.
And none of them do anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that breaks my heart. Mm. And I'm sure it breaks God's heart as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so you dreamt up a new way of doing youth ministry, which became kind of less about a single Friday night event and more about various activities and opportunities throughout the week that might appeal and connect with a whole range of different students. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what that looks like.
Yeah, cool. So I was wrestling with this concept of missional communities. So I know a number of your listeners, a number of your previous speakers have talked a little bit about missional communities, and I was just trying to imagine what could this look like in youth ministry?
Yeah.
And now recognizing those filters, I'm like, okay, how do I connect with introverts? How do I connect with those older students? How do I connect with my own church kids who don't come to this stuff? And so
they're great questions to ask. Like, you know, how do I connect with an introvert? That's a great question to ask.
Yeah, and especially with me I'm an extrovert and quite a people person, and so I intimidate the heck out of them. And so they tend to, you know, walk around me rather than, you know. So, it was a really fascinating question. And so there was another book that I read called Target by Rich Atkinson, I believe. He was actually the youth pastor at Sheffield at that church, Mike Breen's church, who with his book Building Discipling Culture came from. And so they've been doing this for a lot longer. They've been doing it for around a little over 30 years now. And so I don't know how old this book is now, but just reading that book and him trying to wrestle with what does missional communities look like for youth ministry? Like, I couldn't implement exactly what they're doing. Like, they were doing street ministry and they were doing some, like, because the context of Sheffield was very different from my private school setting.
Yeah.
But it was still really helpful. And so I dreamt up this concept. One of the principles, the biblical principles that they talk about in the book, it's a life shape called the up, in, and out. They draw it like a triangle, but it's this concept where, it's for healthy relationships. So it's a biblical principle around healthy relationships. And a healthy relationship should have an up focus, so a God focus, an in focus where you feel like you belong and you feel like it feels like family. And then an out focus where new people are always welcome. And in fact, you go looking for them.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, my youth ministry doesn't really have that. We had an up focus and we had an out focus, but the in wasn't really there because people didn't stay beyond. If they were no longer entertained, then they would leave.
Yeah.
And so I started to try and wrestle with that concept. And so what we did as a youth ministry, we started something called youth clubs. And that was just me trying to think of a different name that's still youth, but it's not a youth group.
Yeah.
So I dreamt up this concept, youth club, and which can happen anytime through the week. So we've got three that happen at the moment, one on Monday after school, one on Thursday after school, and one on Wednesday night. And each of them cater for slightly different demographics of students. So the Wednesday night one is mostly year 10 to 12 sporty boys.
Yeah.
And we have dunking competitions, and, you know. It was the Thursday one. They've not been allowed to use their devices all day. So they just get there, use the school internet and play these little 2D games.
Great.
And, you know, we got a ping pong table and a pool table. So basically what a youth club is, it's, we've set up a shed at the church, which has a pool table, a ping pong table, a couch, like just a lounging area. And we've got a little basketball court. So I've set up an environment. And so for all the teachers out there, they know the environment is the second teacher, right? So we set up an environment, and the youth clubs don't have to do that. We had some happening at people's houses. But at the moment, all three of them are using our youth shed environment. And then a youth club simply is two things. You do something fun. and then have a meaningful discussion.
Yeah.
So that's our formula, something fun and something meaningful.
Mm.
And so, and now this is going to, you're a youth pastor, and this is going to frustrate you just like it does me. I spent the first 20 years of my ministry life focusing so much on telling them how to have fun and setting up, spending all of our budget on games and doing crazy games. But what I find is the generations nowadays, they don't necessarily come to your big fantastic event. So what we do now is I just don't tell them how to have fun. They actually know how to have fun. And so each of the groups, they do something different. And it's whatever they want to do.
That just makes so much sense. It's stupid. Like that.
Tell me about it.
What?
So I no longer tell them how to have fun, and they have more fun, and they actually invite their friends. This boggled my mind. All I did was create an environment that was theirs, that they spoke into. And then the meaningful discussion was a student-led discussion as well, where I answer their questions or we discuss the questions that they have.
Yeah.
And so that's the concept. They create their own fun, and then we talk about the things that they actually want to talk about.
And they're inviting their friends because they have confidence in that group that it's going to be fun because they're deciding kind of what that group looks like.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for the first time, I've got like year 11s and year 12s actually inviting their friends from school, kind of going, yeah, come along. And it's amazing to me. Like I used to spend so much effort creating games and they never used to come.
Yeah.
And now I barely do anything. I'm just present and I hang out with them and I play ping pong with them and I play pool and, you know, and I play basketball with them rather than telling them, like, rather than getting on a microphone and being the coach and the scorer. I just play with them now and it feels much more relational than it ever was before.
That's massive because, so much of the time, youth workers and other church workers, they're trying to do ministry for people rather than ministry with people.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's a time for both, but man, we miss that ministry with part.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I love about the discussion as well, because it's their questions. And some of them, they've actually got answers as well. And they come and they're hungry to talk about the things that might be standing. So if they're in a place where they're still exploring faith and they haven't necessarily decided to follow Jesus yet, they've got questions. And I've got this picture I draw on the board where it's like just out of stick men and there's a stick man. And then just next to the stick man, there's a whole bunch of question marks. And then on the other side of the question marks, there's another stick man, you know, and I draw a love heart with Jesus written in it. And so basically it's just an illustration to say, I understand and I recognize there's a whole bunch of questions that you have before you can really, with your whole life and your whole heart, become a follower of Jesus.
Mm.
And there's an acknowledgement where I might not be able to answer all those questions, but I start erasing the ones in the middle and create basically a pathway between where that person is and to the other side where they can fully embrace being a follower of Jesus.
Mm.
And I'm like, it's not my intention to answer all the questions of the world, but maybe I can answer enough to help them go, okay, no, I can't ignore this anymore. I know Jesus is real and I want to follow him with my life.
Yeah, so that kind of learning process, that discovery process, that is only possible if there is a consistency of the students who are there. And you found that in the youth club kind of model, if we're allowed to call it a model, you found that these kids are sticking around?
Yeah. What I found, it's a little bit harder to get into one just because they're at different times of the week than what every other youth ministry does. So it's a little bit harder to find one, but then once you're in one, you tend to stay because it's a community where everyone is noticed. We actually start the meaningful discussion part by just saying, how was your week and how can we pray for you?
Yeah.
And we've prayed for people to be healed and we've actually even seen people being healed of different injuries and stuff.
Yeah, great.
And we've been able to pray, you know, for their auntie or uncle or someone who's been sick and even for them for themselves. And we've actually, so it's a real personal connection.
So you're finding out needs and you're addressing them in real time.
Yeah. And it's like, it's really living life together and going, look, hey, I can't fix that, but I know someone who can. Let's ask him. Let's pray. And I find that even the non-Christians, I think there's a level of they actually expect us to do that.
Yeah.
They don't expect us to entertain them. They actually expect us to be Christians. And I think it's a level of, well, we're not hypocrites. I came here knowing that you guys are Christians and, oh, look, there you are. You're being a Christian, praying and talking about God. Fancy that.
Great.
So there you go.
Hey, tell me, how has this gone down with the rest of the church that you're a part of? Has this shift been received well, and what's that look like for the rest of the church?
Yeah, it's a great question. And if you're a youth pastor listening, you'll like this answer and probably hate it at the same time. What I've found, and so I'm an old youth pastor. I'm in my early 40s, and so there's a level of I'm trusted to try something crazy. Yeah. But what I've found is, to be honest, nobody really cares what you do in youth ministry. so long as they hear that there are students going, and especially if the church students are going, then they're happy. And so I think it's a really safe place to explore different ideas and concepts and models. And that's what I've found. And it was a bit of a selling point, but I preach it now, and I preach a discipleship, and then I tell them what we're doing in youth ministry, the church is actually quite excited about it. Mm. So there's more to it. So each youth club, we try and have an up, in, and out kind of mentality, where we're always acknowledging God and focusing on God. Each discussion comes back, not that it's a Bible study. And this is an interesting thing. We've stopped doing Bible studies. We no longer do a Bible study. What we do, though, is we are Christians, and we grab their questions, and then we give it a biblical frame. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we often go to the Bible and look up the Bible. But it's not a Bible study that you purchase off the shelf.
Right.
Because what I find is it's a little bit plastic.
And sometimes those Bible studies are answering questions that they don't actually have.
Exactly. So, and the really cool thing, so I'm kind of going off my own track now, but the really awesome thing is my Wednesday night group, we've been going for 2 or 3 years now, and we've kind of got to the end of their questions. And so now what we're doing is actually something called DBM or DBS, Discovery Bible Method or Discovery Bible Study, and which is quite simply, you read a passage of the Bible and then you ask yourself three questions. What is God saying, and what are you going to do about it? They're really the two main questions. And then when it's appropriate, ask the third question, who are you going to tell?
Mm-hmm.
So what is God saying? You read a passage. What is God saying? And I just give them a minute of silence where they pray and they say, God, what are you trying to tell me through this passage? And then we talk about, what are you going to do about it? So it's that simple, allowing God to speak through the Bible and then inviting them to actually apply it to their lives.
Mm.
And they love it.
Yeah.
And what I found is they've actually got, I don't even tell them which passage to read. I say, you know, are there some Bible studies that you guys are interested in? Because there are so many that they've heard of. And if they've grown up in church, maybe they've heard of some Bible passages. But the kids who have never been to church, they barely know any of it. And so I tend to gravitate towards the Gospels, because that's the most important story, I think. And you know, they're fascinated. We're reading about Jesus healing people and raising people from the dead. And it's just like, it's amazing. So it's really interesting. So we started out just answering their questions, which is really just about meeting them where they're at. And then now we are doing a study in the Bible, but it's kind of not a Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much about, what is God saying to them individually? So it's still very student led and can I say Holy Spirit led?
Yeah.
And which is great, because actually what I'm doing there is I'm teaching them how to read the Bible for themselves.
Mm, and leaving room for the Holy Spirit to actually be a co-teacher in that space.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. So, and it's so important. When you make a disciple, they have to know and be responsible for their own growth.
Mm.
Right. So they're not dependent on me.
Yeah.
They actually know how to read the Bible for themselves. And we're teaching them this rhythm of how to read the Bible now.
Mm.
And we've actually had a number of students saved just through that youth club. I just felt one day they were asking questions, and then it just led towards a gospel presentation. And 5 out of the 8 that were there prayed to accept Jesus that day. And 2 of the 3 that didn't had already been baptized. And I was just blown away by that. And it was very much, I didn't plan it. I think God planned it.
Mm. Now, tell me, Matt, as you've been journeying with these youth clubs for a little while now, as you've been pondering on the missional community kind of philosophy of church, what are some principles, right, for our listeners who are perhaps invested in a local congregation who aren't specifically serving in youth ministry or, mm-hmm. or with the youth?
Yeah.
What are some principles or insights that you've learned along the way that could be applied to the much broader church?
Yeah. So, okay. So a missional community is really just a bunch of Christians that actually join together and move into the community, doing something that's relevant socially in the community, kind of filling that social gap, that social space. Yeah. And you're just being Christians.
Yeah.
So in my environment, it's slightly different. Like I don't know that we're strictly fit into the missional community mold very well, just because it's weird. Like as a youth ministry, you could consider the whole youth ministry a missional community, or possibly a demographic is also another description of it.
Yeah.
So I consider the whole youth ministry a missional community. So we I have leaders and we together move into that youth demographic with an intention of mission of making disciples.
Mm.
And so as a broader whole, maybe this will help people who aren't in youth ministry as well. We have if you zoom out, we do a youth service once a month, which is, if you think of the up in and out, that would be our kind of a communal up.
Yep.
And then we also do youth clubs every week. So that would be our like corporate in, making it feel like family.
Mm.
And then we also do social events once a month.
Yeah.
So for example, we're going ice skating in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
And that's like more of a broader capture net that students can just invite their friends. They know it's not going to be weird. It's not a bait and switch. We're not going to bait them with fun and then all of a sudden talking, telling them about Jesus. It's really just about getting to know us as a community of youth. And so we have that broader kind of up in and out in our whole youth ministry. And I'm fascinated with thinking about what that looks like for the rest of the church as well. You know, as we think about, home groups and we think about how church does the different vehicles that churches use.
Yeah.
And this is probably the most controversial part, is my end goal is not to actually get the students into church on a Sunday morning.
Mm.
My end goal is actually to have them discipled. And so the youth clubs is actually where that happens, not the Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Sunday morning is fantastic. I love Sunday morning. I'm a worship leader myself. I love corporate word. I love corporate worship. I love corporate prayer. And I think that's what the Sunday morning is for. But it's not really for discipleship. And that was a hard pill to swallow. And it's a hard pill to sell to the elders and to the senior pastor. But I don't apologize for it because I am making disciples and it's really good. So I think probably if you're not a youth pastor listening to this, a really healthy thing is to ask is where are we making disciples? Which vehicles, if I may refer to like the church service and the home groups and the men's ministry, women's ministry and all the other stuff we get busy doing, if we consider them as different vehicles, like which vehicle does discipleship actually fit inside of nicely? Because for disciples to be made, you kind of need to know each other and to be invited into each other's lives. And there's a level of intimacy where you are known and you can just walk the life of Jesus together. And Sunday morning is not that space. Mm. You know, you might be sitting next to the people that you're doing that with, but you're not, the senior pastor isn't doing that with everyone. They can't. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Unless you've got a really small church. And then maybe actually you're doing it. But generally, that's not the case. And so I think the healthy question is, where are we making disciples? And often the best answer is probably home groups.
Mm.
But most home groups are still doing Bible studies.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to actually invite a non-Christian into that space. It's a very uncomfortable thing.
Mm.
The 3DM guys, they talk a lot about the different spheres of life. And so there's intimate, which is just like two people or three people. Maybe it's your wife or your husband or your best friend that you actually share everything with.
Mm.
And then there's a personal space, which is like a small group setting,
yep.
Where you share more of your life and you do life together.
Yeah, so maybe up to 10, 12?
Yeah, 3 to 12-ish. Yep. Yeah, there's different people to say different numbers. But and then there's this social space, which is more like that 10 to 50 or 10 to 30, 10 kind of space, and then it's the public, which is more the 50 up.
Mm.
And so what we find in church is we do the 50 up, that public space, which is a church service, and we do the personal space, which is normally home groups. But what we're missing is that social space where people can, it's just a comfortable place to invite your friends, your work colleagues. And so I'm fascinated with the idea of what that looks like actually for the adult church as well. Because it could be as simple as a barbie.
Yeah.
You know, you just invite mates around for a barbie and there's no preaching. Mm. You know, maybe you say grace or something, but it's just about getting to know the other people in the body of Christ and through relationship. And maybe they are drawn more into what it looks like to follow Jesus.
And as we say on this podcast, there's no magic formula, there's no silver bullet, but what you're on about is providing those opportunities, creating that environment where these conversations can take place.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you for sharing with us today, Matt. It's been so cool to catch up with you. We haven't really seen each other post-COVID, so really good to sit and chat. And thank you so much for coming onto the Church Uncharted podcast and sharing your experience, sharing your journey that you've been on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt. It's been a privilege. I love it.
And that's a wrap for season 2 of Church Uncharted. If you have any thoughts on today's episode, check out the links in the episode description. We'll now take a couple of months into mission, but follow us on Spotify or iTunes. That way, you'll be the first to hear about season 3. During this intermission, would you do us a favor? Would you tell someone about this podcast or even post it to your social media? That way, we can all be encouraged by the everyday power of the gospel, be given a deeper love for God's church, and be stirred to see the way the Spirit is at work in the lives of those around us.